Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Tuesday. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold. And you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way. And I recommend you start with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need an interior, exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you and answer all your questions. Give them a call at 385-6649, 385-6649, and we appreciate their sponsorship. Good morning, Bobby. How are you today? Oh, caught you with the
Good morning, Steve. I am doing great, man.
Hey, if I was a little more professional, I would have noticed the mic was out of position there.
Oh, but that's all good.
Yeah, yeah. So, hey, we've got the NFL draft this week. I don't follow media real close. I sort of choose what I want to look at. But when I'm at a restaurant eating, I look up and I can tell without seeing sound what's going on. You look at all the TV screens and you sort of tell what the talk is. Like last week it was the Oscars, which hardly nobody watched, I understand.
Yeah. I didn't even know it was last week until after it was over.
Exactly. But this week is, if you look, you see all the, you know, the talk about the NFL draft. And actually Florida with three teams really is very important. Tampa winning the Super Bowl, obviously. I'm looking to get better. The Miami Dolphins, you know, with Tua, trying to build around them. And then, of course,
without Tua. Without Tua.
Who knows what's going to happen on draft day. But then Jacksonville, though, is the one that is really in the I guess they're the focus of everything right now. So we'll see what happens there. Listen, a lot of information in the show today. The regular session is over on Friday. So, you know, there's a lot of things that happen from day to day on some pretty important legislation. So in the second segment today, we're going to talk about the elections bill that, you know, passed the House and passed the Senate, but now it's back in the House, and this morning I read they've got an amendment that's going to strike a lot of the language. But we'll talk about sort of the specifics of that, where that is. The social media crackdown has passed the Senate. We'll see if that gets to the governor's desk. There's also something I wanted to spend a little bit of time on, which I think is appropriate for where we are in our country, is there's a police reform bill that has bipartisan support moving through the legislature. And I think we reported on this a couple weeks ago, but now it has passed the House. I want to go over what's in that bill and what's not in there. But this is something that's not getting enough coverage in Florida in terms of the bipartisan efforts to really address an issue that I think everybody knows is there to certain degrees. But here Republicans and Democrats have gotten together. You know, I think it's important that we talk about this, because this is compromise and it's moving a ball forward. So we'll address that. The third segment, we'll switch to education issues, which will also include some of the topics that will be covered in the Leon County Board school meeting today. But there's a voucher expansion, which say it's the biggest expansion of voucher school for vouchers in the country. I'll just tell you as a tease, if there's certain people, if you're making under, you know, I think the limit now is $100,000, you can get vouchers to go to charter schools, I think, our private schools. So we'll look into that. During the last segment, we'll do what we usually do. We'll look at the COVID trends from the previous week. Also, I want to talk about one county that has already announced that they are going to do away with, are they going to make masks voluntary over the summer and in the fall. The school board has made that decision here in Florida, which is consistent with what the Secretary of Education in Florida, Richard Corcoran, wanted to have done. So we'll talk about that. We're supposed to get some new guidance today from the Biden administration, from the CDC, on mask wearing by people who are vaccinated. So I'm not sure what that's going to be, but I'm pretty sure it won't be a quote progressive in the sense of what a lot of people looking for. And you know, a lot of local governments are using the term, you know, we're going to rely on CDC guidance. And the Leon County government, the county government, the Leon County Commission, has said that now they have a meeting coming up on May 11th They'll have another couple weeks of data. You know, they talked about the repeal process and the mask mandate, so we'll have to see where that goes. But again, I don't expect a lot from the president in terms of the mask, the guidance from the CDC. But there's a lot of communities around the country that are not following the CDC guidance. They're making their own decisions based on what they're seeing on the ground. And so we'll talk a little bit about that in our last segment. Before we get out of here in the first segment, I wanted to touch on the issue with police-related shootings. I want to give you two perspectives here. I mean, it's not getting coverage in Florida, but you know, Tallahassee is home to civil rights, famed civil rights attorney Ben Crump. And, you know, he tweeted out after the George Floyd trial and the police officer there was found guilty of murder, second-degree murder, there was a shooting in Columbus, Ohio. And Ben Crump tweeted out that another child was killed by a police officer who was unarmed. Well, it was quickly noted from a video from the officer-worn camera that I think everybody's seen this video, that this girl, for whatever reason, was trying to stab another girl. The police officer was there for 25 seconds. And, you know, in my view, watching the video followed proper protocol from what I understand it. Ben Crump still has that tweet that is up. And I think this gets to the point of why we are so divided on issues like this. There's no recognition of nuance, no recognition of, hey, look, this was a situation that the officer behaved in a way that he was trained to do so. Now, you know, on the George Floyd incident, there were people who were advocates for obviously finding him guilty, said, you know, thank God there was a camera there. But that works both ways, because if you go down to Columbus, Ohio, there's a police officer that had to pull his gun and shoot someone to save another life and was under attack by LeBron James and now Ben Crump. And you can bet your life he's saying, I'm glad there was a camera there. And so nobody owns, you know, that the camera. I mean, it is a good thing for both sides, for police officers and people that are mistreated by rogue police officers. And so to try to take this and make it all, well, you know, thank God we had the camera in Minneapolis. Well, thank God there was a police officer body-worn camera in Columbus, Ohio, too. And I think this is the thing that's going to really help alleviate or clean up and address law enforcement issues. And so, I mean, I think where else can you get a better example of both sides of that issue? Now, something else that's not getting covered in Florida related to this is Congresswoman Val Demings from Orlando, who is a Democrat, and I don't know a lot about her, but I understand she's a progressive Democrat, but she's a law enforcement official, and she was a police officer in Orlando. She was on Face the Nation Sunday, a national television show, and she said that the cop in Columbus, Ohio, took care of business the way he was trained to do. Unfortunately, it resulted in a death. Now, I can't find that being covered anywhere in the state of Florida. You would think that that would be a big story, that you have a progressive Democrat who understands law enforcement is saying, look, this is a situation where police acted accordingly. But you can't see it. Now, you can't see it on a new statewide website that I wanted to push real quick. It's called the Florida Capital Star, floridacapitalstar.com. I'm affiliated with that in helping them determine what stories to publish. But if you go there, you'll see the story about Ben Crump and the story about Val Demings. You'll see a story about the Matt Gaetz controversy. What this new website is trying to do, has been up in Florida for just a couple of weeks, is to provide coverage of news in Florida that you might not get anywhere else. Fact-based journalism. Again, I think one of the things that we're seeing here in Florida is the left-wing bias of the traditional print media, and it is not, it doesn't do anybody a service of trying to bring people together or get the facts out. So anyway, give that a shot if you get a chance. It's floridacapitalstar.com. So that's the first segment of Above the Fold today. When we come back, we're going to dip into what's going on in the Florida legislature. Remember, session's over Friday. A lot of things, a lot of moving targets. So I'll get you up to date on a couple of important issues. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3, where we try to get to the bottom of the issues, the facts at hand, try to get rid of the emotion. And so, first of all, a little national stuff that affects Florida. The census has come out with their population adjustments, and Florida is going to gain one seat in the U.S. House. So that puts us, I believe it puts us at 30 now. Texas is getting two new seats. California, is losing one or two. A lot of the Midwest losing seats, Ohio, Michigan, people moving. So anyway, that's a big deal because reapportionment, the way your congressional districts are created every 10 years gets changed. So that'll be the battle that's coming up. I think they're supposed to have the data in by August or September. Anyway, that's, again, as Florida, I think, was the second fastest growing state in the country. But anyway, that little information there for you. Now, on to, as I was talking about the state legislature here and a couple of interesting bills, one of them was the elections bill. And as I said, you know, the way this works is the House has got to pass a bill, Senate's got to pass a bill, and you got to go and, you know, you usually go to conference. This is on the budget, on bills. For example, the Senate passes an elections bill, they send it to the House. The House can strike everything from the Senate bill and add their own bill, and then they had to send it back to the Senate. And they call it ping pong for obvious reasons. Well, this has happened now with the elections bill that we talked about. Is the Senate passed a bill that tried to deal with drop boxes and some vote by mail issues. And you know, this is the bill that is being called basically suppression voting bill, and they're trying to address some of the concerns that come with some of the rules that were waived during the pandemic, and we didn't have any issues in Florida per se. However, if you look around the country, there were a couple of states that had some willy-nilly rules on drop boxes and how they processed that. So they were trying to be proactive, the Florida legislature. So the Senate has passed this bill. And now what has happened is, I'm looking at my Twitter feed here 2 hours ago, the supporter in the House of the election bill files a strike-all amendment on the Senate-passed elections bill, which means they're going to basically put in what they want to put in. Now, they'll negotiate with the Senate, but since they're doing that, they'll have to send it back to the Senate for the Senate to vote on that, to get it to the desk of the governor. So it will be interesting to see exactly what happens there. Now, another bill that was passed out of the Senate was Senate Bill 7072, to do with the social media issues here, and it passed 22-17 in the Senate, aimed at cracking down on social media platforms and their influence in deplatforming political candidates and journalistic enterprises. The bill allows for the Florida Elections Commission to fine a social media platform $100,000 a day for deplatforming statewide candidates, while fining them $10,000 a day for deplatforming all other candidates. The bill also provides that if a candidate is receiving free advertisement from a social media platform, then the ads are deemed to be in-kind contributions and the candidate must be contacted. Other restrictions include prohibiting social media platforms from receiving economic benefits or contracting with public entities that are on the antitrust violator vendor list. Now, listen, the issue here is on that last point on contracting with public entities, the nonprofit group that was funded by the Zuckerbergs gave a lot of money, hundreds of millions of dollars, to supervisor of elections around the country. And there's some indication they had a lot of impact on how the election process took place in terms of helping provide security for drop boxes and other things, get out the vote messages. But the question becomes this is like, and you know, I talked to some officials here in Florida about this is, you know, when does it become biased when you start deciding, you know, if you're trying to get out the vote and you're just doing it certain areas of your county or your voting district? Who is regulating that? And, you know, one of the things, again, is about where you put drop boxes. And, you know, in Florida, the issue, we use drop boxes over during the pandemic, but it's much different than in some other states. For example, you know, I checked this out in Miami-Dade to find out, well, look, who decided where drop boxes go? Well, in Miami-Dade, they put a drop box at every early voting location. So they didn't say, hey, we're just going to put them in these early voting locations. They put them in all early voting locations, so it was spread out across the county. That's not what happened in a number of states, and so this bill was, moved forward. Our part of the provision is to keep these public entities from having influence on the decision on the decisions by the supervisor of elections. And so, you know, again, it'll be interesting to see if this reaches the point where we have a nuanced debate about the specifics, or if it just gets called a suppression bill. Again, you know, politics being what it is they're trying to generate this emotional reaction in voters so they can, you know, basically contend to consolidate their power. But we'll see. And, you know, Stacey Abrams is doing this in Georgia, and, you know, with regards to the bill up there, which is they're addressing even bigger issues in Georgia. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on this and see what the look of both the social media bill and the elections bill is when it finally gets to the desk of Governor Ron DeSantis. Now, another bill which I don't think is getting enough coverage is this police reform bill that is a bipartisan bill. And I want to read from a story here, which, you know, again, I don't think it's getting as much play in the media as it should. It says here, black lawmakers worked with conservative Republicans. That's just how often do you see that line? Black lawmakers worked with the conservative Republicans in the House, Bobby.
Listen, man, that's like a unicorn just worked with. I don't even know. I can't even think of a second one by the time I got there.
What we should do is we should take that sentence and put parentheses around it and Google it and see how many articles it comes up in. But anyway, black lawmakers worked with conservative Republicans in the House to craft legislation that law enforcement organizations, advocacy groups, and lawmakers from both parties favored, overcoming some of the partisan rancor around policing that erupted after George Floyd's death. So, you know, that is a great paragraph there, and I may have to steal it, but the legislation passed the House 113-0 and goes to the Senate, which is expected to take up the measure. It says Republican leaders often argue that police are unfairly maligned, that they have been aggressive in pushing back against some of the more controversial demands of protesters who took to the streets in Florida and across the nation. And so it says here, the legislation in the House, now there's some things it doesn't do that Democrats wanted, but instead of just taking their ball and going home, they decided to go ahead and work through this. It doesn't end qualified immunity for police officers. It doesn't standardize police body camera policies. What it does do is it addresses the focus on police use of force. It says a major focus of the legislation is use of force training and policies. The bill requires every law enforcement agency to have a use of force policy that includes certain provisions, essentially creating a minimum statewide standard for how police uses force. Police agencies must adopt these guidelines for the proportional use of force and how to de-escalate situations without using force. So, you look, this is great news. And, you know, again, from the political side of it, this is something that's needed, and that's why the two different groups came together. Now, there's no doubt that this will be used politically, probably by Governor Ron DeSantis, as, look, we're making progress. We recognize this is an issue. We're not ignoring it, and they're not. And I think this is kudos to everybody involved with this. And the only thing now is I wish it would get more coverage in the statewide media. And again, we'll look back and look at that first line. When you get back, I'll tell you how often that appears in Google. So anyway, stay tuned. When we get back, we'll talk about voucher expansion and the Leon County School Board meeting, which takes place today at 6 o'clock. Stay tuned.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love. You never take advice. Someday you'll pay the price. I know. I've seen it before. It happens all the time. You're closing the door.
Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. All right, so I put in to Google quotes, black lawmakers work with conservative Republicans.
Oh, you actually looked it up. Oh, man. What'd you get?
I guess this is the only time it's been used.
So nothing else.
It came up four times, four stories, and it just ends. It says four results. And the quote is, black lawmakers worked with conservative Republicans. So in other words, in the history of everything that's on Google, that phrase, and unless I'm doing something wrong, I mean, I didn't put last within the last month. This is the whole deal. And it comes up. Let me see. Yeah, that's amazing. And if you just joined us, we're referring to a statement that's used in the beginning of a story about police reform, where black lawmakers worked with conservative Republicans to craft a solution to the police use of force issue here in Florida. And again, we were talking about it being a way that can bring people together and you compromise. And it's not really getting, this is something that passed yesterday. And it's showing up in two newspapers.
So no one is reporting on these?
Two newspapers. So it's not in the Miami Herald. Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm sorry. I got back up. This statement's not in that. So anyway, we'll move on. But just the point that, again, it's news when you have people working together like this, and I think it deserves a little bit more publicity. All right, I promise you we get to the voucher situation. This is a big deal because, you know, look, the voucher issue is something that is very complicated, but it cuts across party lines because there are a lot of African Americans that support school vouchers. And Republicans use this. I don't think they do a good job of communicating this, but there's a couple things here. They're trying to, with school vouchers, you're trying to give parents the ability to go to take money out of the public school system because you think it's not working for you and go to private schools or charter schools. And the idea goes back to, you know, the concept that competition will make things better. Now, you know, I don't think there's a better example here in Leon County. We've got some Title I schools, elementary schools come to mind, that just have been underperforming for a number of years. Now, I'm not saying this is all on the education system. Obviously, there are issues that go into this. You have to teach kids as you find them. But this is these voucher programs are growing. This is an expansion that means basically one of the major things here that caught my eye is the proposal would increase the maximum income eligibility to receive vouchers to 375% of the federal poverty level, meaning a family of four making almost $100,000 a year would qualify. Now, they also, another thing here is that you don't have to use the voucher. You don't have to be in public schools. You can already be in a private school or a charter school. And so, you know, this is something, I think this is in Florida, depending on obviously what happens with the politics of this, the state. This is going to continue to move forward because I believe there are a lot of people that support this. Now, the critics, I wish there was a way that people who support the vouchers could address in a more succinct way the criticisms of this. And the biggest criticism is that private schools and charter schools don't have the same accountability requirements that public schools have. Now, the argument on the charter school side of this is, hey, look, this is buyer beware. Parents, if they don't like the school is not meeting their needs, if they're not being accountable, if they're not being transparent, the parents can just take that voucher and go somewhere else. And so it's sort of like a free market. They want to keep you happy because you are bringing, you know, you're buying their services. And I understand that philosophy. But I do think that if this is one of the bridges or one of the obstacles to getting more people on board with the voucher program and overall improving the school experience, the K-12 school experience for people, maybe it's something that Republicans and advocates of school vouchers should spend a little bit more time on trying to address, because that is something that I see over and over again, is that there are different standards in charter schools and in private schools where this taxpayer money is going, and they should be equal. Now, you know, one would argue that maybe there are too many requirements in Leon schools because of, or not Leon schools, but in public schools because of the requirements that, for example, teacher unions put on schools. So, anyway, that's an issue that I think is going to have to get addressed. All right, now we want to segue into the Leon County School Board meeting, which is taking place today at 6. And Tyler Reports will have a reporter following that, and we'll do a story on what happens there. Again, you know, their agendas are not as filled out as the Leon County and also the city of Tallahassee, but there are a couple issues here that I wanted to, address. There's a couple of settlements, and we were just talking about unions with the Leon Classroom Teacher Association. And, you know, I think, and I, you know, don't know this for sure, but obviously looking at this, I think what happens is the LCTA, the Leon Classroom Teacher Association, you know, they have an agreement with Leon County School Board. And I guess if they have these grievances, they file these complaints or file these memos with the school board to get them to say, look, we have a problem here. We'd like to resolve this, or we may have to ratchet this on up. And so there's a couple of these on the agenda today. And one of them is sort of interesting. There's a memorandum of agreement between the District School Board of Leon County and the Leon County Classroom Teachers Association related to a Canvas technology specialist. And I read into this, and basically what the union is arguing is that the school board needs to have a Canvas technology specialist, I guess, in each school, or they should agree to pay a supplement for a specialist so that teachers can get guidance on how to use the technology. Okay, makes a little sense. There's a there's another memorandum of understanding here between the District School Board of Leon County and the LCTA regarding teacher transfer day process. Now, this has to do with teachers that want to transfer, and I guess this lays out the parameters of who can transfer, on what day you can put in for a transfer to maybe another position in another school. So, again, something that's probably not really out of the ordinary for the for a union negotiation. Now, going back real quick for the Canvas technology specialist, there's a fiscal impact here of this agreement, of this memorandum, of about $50,000. Is what they say in the agenda item. Now, the other one here that I think is a little bit more controversial, definitely a lot more substantive, is a settlement agreement between the District School Board of Leon County and the Leon Classroom Teacher Association regarding teacher/student contact time. Now, I want to read you a little bit more of the item summary here. It says, LCS and LCTA acknowledge that COVID-19 pandemic has affected all aspects of the district teacher-student contact time. Affected all aspects of the district. Teacher-student contact time is exceeding the limits as specified by the contract due to the pandemic. Now, this indicates that there's some kind of measure of teacher/student contact in the union contract, and it's been exceeded because of the pandemic. So they're looking for a settlement. It says, therefore, all and so they evidently approached the school board and said, listen, we want something in return for having to have more contact with students. And so the settlement says that instructional staff, which there is about 1,500, will receive no less than 12 days/90 hours of compensatory time, which shall be prorated to and not exceed a 7.5-hour day during the 2020-2021 school year, with exception to hourly personnel. So in other words, if you're a teacher, which is paid salary, you're going to get 12 days or 90 hours of comp time because of student contact, increased student contact during the pandemic. Teachers may use up to 4 compensatory days per year beginning July 1st, 2020. The use of the time can be used as sick leave. The settlement will sunset on July 1st, 2026. The time will not be paid out for any reason upon separation of employment with the district. In other words, if you were to get this and leave, you can't get paid for it. But there's no fiscal impact here, and we have inquired with the school board. We're going to try to get that. But I will tell you that it's got to be between $3 and $4 million in terms of the fiscal impact on this. And I don't know where the funds are coming from. I would assume that obviously we have the money, or we wouldn't have settled it. But this, again, is it's something that, it's a lot of time. It's 12 days. And I guess this is a negotiation that the union has been able to be successful at with the school board, and they're going to get more money moving forward because of the pandemic. And you know, this opens up so many questions that I want to look into. I did not know that the union contract has some requirement or some limit on the amount of time teachers have contact with students. How they measured that and how they decided that that was exceeded, I have no idea. But this is an issue that will be up today at the Leon County School Board meeting, and we'll obviously be following that. All right, when we get back, our last segment, we'll talk about the COVID trends, a school board around Florida that is decided to make the mask optional, and close up some loose ends. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold. All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here with Steve Stewart. It's Tuesday. Hope you had a great weekend. Weather was very good, and you know it's supposed to be in the 80s this week, so we'll see. Probably rain on the way in the next couple of days. As we do on Tuesday at this time, look at the COVID trends here in Leon County. As we've said, we don't like to look at the daily changes. It's again, not very reflective of what's going on. So we do a weekly report, and we've done a number of these. And this was for the week ending April 25th. And I think the summary is that cases, the indicators remain low. There's been some movement up and down. But if you look at the benchmarks we've got after the major fall beginning in January, the number of cases per day, about 50. We have been below that number, I guess, since a little bit late in February. And if you look at the hospitalizations, they've been right around 20 since beginning of March, and that's falling from 158 in the middle of January. And so again, we've reached these levels, and you know, the vaccinations obviously now are having an impact with I would assume over 70% of our population of over 65 being vaccinated. The positivity rate has been below 5% for now, I think, over 60 straight days. It has gone up since being down around 2%. It is like now, it, I guess it's, let's see what the exact number was, 4.1%. And I'm not sure, given the case numbers, how important the positivity rate is now, unless you start seeing a major increase in the cases and hospitalizations. But again, that number has been below 5%. And it will be interesting to see if we get another 2 weeks of these type of numbers, or a little less than 2 weeks, with the county commission meeting coming up on May the 11th, to see if they do anything. And as I do anything different than they have in the past, I know that there's a couple of different issues going on here. You've got the Leon County mask mandate, and you've got the comments by Commissioner of Education Richard Corcoran about making mask voluntary for schools in the fall. And so, and then you've got this CDC guidance that's coming down, mask guidance for people that are vaccinated. So I don't know how all that's going to play in, but there's, you know, there at some point has to be this momentum that will, you know, I guess these different government entities are going to look at the way things are going on the ground, and they'll make decisions. Now, I will tell you, you know, if you start looking at just personal experience, going out to restaurants, grocery stores, fewer and fewer people are wearing masks. Restaurants are much more crowded, which is a good thing. And you know, the idea here is that, you know, government sort of risk losing its credibility if they continue to, even, you know, if people start to ignore what government is saying to do, it loses credibility.
I will say, I don't think the government has a lot of credibility with people right now anyway.
All right, now that's, you can send your emails to Bobby, care of Bobby, at Real Talk 93.3. Yeah, and so I think, you know, one of the things, so you've got to be careful with this, and you continue to say that you're going to have this mask mandate and nobody's really following it, then it really just makes you sort of, I mean, next time something happens, it just, like, you're not being taken seriously. So we'll see what happens with regards to the Leon County government. Now, again, the same thing's going to happen with Leon County schools. As we've talked about, Alachua County, which is home to Gainesville, which is obviously very comparable to what's going on here, comparable to the Leon County, home to a big university and large student population, obviously. But they, it says here, an article in the Alachua Chronicle says, based on the latest COVID-19 figures in our community and the recommendations of medical experts from the University of Florida and the Alachua County Health Department, Alachua County Public Schools is making the following changes to our masking and other COVID protocols. For the rest of this school year, masks will not be required outdoors on our campuses for students or adults. We will continue to encourage social distancing as much as possible. Masks will still be required indoors, except when eating and drinking. So that's for the remainder of the school year. Temperature checks will not be required on our campuses for students or adults. That's the second change. Third, masks will be optional on our campuses, indoors and outdoors, for our summer programs. This is a huge issue, and it's something that's going to have to be addressed here in terms of the community centers here within the city, school programs. But it says here, unless there is a significant spike in cases or other health safety issues. So here they are making a decision based on what's on the ground, and now they're going to adjust it if things change. Sounds pretty smart, Bobby.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Building credibility. And then the last thing is, masks will be optional on our campuses, indoor and outdoors, for 2021-2022 school year, depending on the course of the pandemic locally and based on the advice of our medical experts. So they're making that decision right now, moving forward. And I think that, this, again, it doesn't say that it's a decision. And this is where we get into this thing about you're either with us or against us. They're not saying this is the way it's going to be come hell or high water. What they're saying is, given the information we have now, we're going to go ahead and say this. But if something changes, we can go ahead and hold it. We can also make a change. Now, I don't know. I'd have to look and see if they still have a mask mandate in Alachua County, but I guess not.
So the way that I'm hearing this is kind of a little different than what you're presenting. I'm hearing this as like, as in the government is putting this out because, like, oh, okay, well, they're not going to listen to us anyway. Like, as you're saying, like, oh, they're saying let's mandate, we're going to have half and half. I think maybe this is like, okay, no one's listening to us. Let's say, okay, maybe we'll do half and we can get them back.
Yeah, and I think, again, that is, and I'm looking at Alachua County's numbers right now. And so their positivity rate is comparable to ours. It looks to me to be higher. And so their hospitalizations, let's check, looks like their hospitalizations are comparable to ours. And so this is where you get into this issue of, you don't want to put yourself in a box. And, I know that everybody views this as political. Richard Corcoran came out with this and said, look, we would like for people to be, for this to be optional in the fall. And instead of, reacting from a political position, just, why not look at your numbers and say, look, we might consider this. Obviously, there's changes coming up. We've got 140 million people in the United States that are now vaccinated. And so to argue that the same policies that you did in the fall of this year are going to be in place in the fall of next year, I think is just, people are just going to shake their head. Why not make it a more measured response? Nuanced, Bobby, nuanced.
I agree with you. Yeah, I'm here. Like, I didn't even know that you, like I said, I get my news from above the fold and from you. Why would you just do the same thing if we have people who are actually getting vaccinated now?
Why would you say, look, if we continue on the path of where the vaccinations are going in the fall, we should be able to relax the mask mandate for students. But again,
I agree.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Again, plenty of time. We'll get more update on the data. More vaccinations obviously will be taking place, before the fall. So you would argue. I think that the big thing, though, is going to be for the summer with kids out of school. What, are you going to say that you've got to wear a mask at these community centers that are where a lot of these kids go to stay out of trouble, obviously? And then, when you make those changes are going to have to basically spill over into the fall. So it'll be interesting to see how Leon County government responds and also Leon County schools. So anyway, all right, thanks for joining me today. We'll be back with another edition of Above the Fold on Thursday. So continue to have a great week and have a great afternoon. Waiting for the